Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, December 31st, 2015. It's our last show of the year. Wow. With me today, I have my A-team of crack shooters. Kelly Gumond, how are you?
I'm pitying fools at the moment. Jeff, how are you?
That was awesome. I'm doing great. John Martellaro, how are you?
I am good. Great to be here. Good morning.
It's always great to have both of you guys here, and I just love that that you put a smile on my face, so thank you very much.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Yes.
Says the A-team.
That's right. Hey, the first thing I figured we could talk about today is this whole thing with this new Touch ID hack and just how easy it's supposed to be able to duplicate someone's fingerprint and then get into their iPhone through Touch ID. And I'm just shaking my head like, oh, really, people? So, Kelly, you wrote up the piece. So, fill us in.
So, here's the basis of this is that there is an association in Europe called the Chaos Computer Club. And they have an annual get together every year, and I think it's still going on now. Earlier this week, one of the people who spoke at this conference, it's sort of like DEF CON, where people get together and kind of show off some of the stuff that they've been hacking or cracking, depending. And one of the people who was at this year gave a talk about biometric identification and how some of it can be bypassed. And the interesting, there were a number of things that he showed in the talk. And the ones that were the most interesting to me were the stuff that aren't Touch ID, because Touch ID was sort of the last piece that he touched on in going through the conversation. So anything that uses a facial recognition engine in order to authenticate you for something can be reasonably bypassed by a reasonably high quality printout on a color laser printer of a picture of someone else. So I could take a picture of Jeff with my phone, print it on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper in color, hold that up to my face, and probably bypass a facial recognition scanner, which I thought was really impressive.
That is impressive. It now makes me want to use my butt for facial recognition.
The second thing that I thought was interesting about this was that he used a fingerprint scanner, and it's one of these. It looked like it was connected via USB, and it's not the swipe that you swipe your finger across like on a laptop. It's one of these little pads that you press your finger onto, and they used a photograph of someone that included their index finger from a few feet away with a higher-end DSLR camera. It wasn't like, you know, they went and bought a camera the price of my car and then, you know, did this. They were just using a press photo that someone had taken. And they were able to get enough of the fingerprint to bypass the security on this fingerprint scanner, which is another thing that's very common, which is why I thought it was so interesting, because all of this other stuff, to me, out in the world, I have seen way more often than I've seen Touch ID. So the fact that these things can be bypassed this way, there's a cool trick in the beginning of the video where they took a photo of someone while the person was entering information on their phone, like entering into a keypad, and they were able to take the pinpoint of light from the person's eye in the photo and expand that out far enough to be able to make a 90% on the first try accurate guess as to the person's code.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and especially when you think about, like, there's a camera in the ATM now and all the different places that there are cameras where you will be looking at a keypad and being able to enter information. The amount of light reflected from an ATM screen into your eye as you enter the code, it seems to me like that would be a pretty easy thing for someone to kind of get hold of. So considering we see, you know, skimmers and stuff on ATMs and gas pumps and stuff semi-regularly.
This is why Apple Pay on a watch is going to be so cool, because
you just
wave your hand over the terminal and there's nothing that anybody can intercept.
Well, this is what's great about Apple Pay, is that even if they do intercept it, they're not getting your credit card number.
It's a one-time thing. To me, that's super cool. They just get a token number.
Right.
Right, because even if they do unlock Apple Pay to bust it open, when they bust it open, they're still not, if they are able to open it and get the information for the credit card, they're still not able to see the 16-digit number on the plastic in your wallet. So that's one of the reasons I really like Apple Pay. So these guys took an iPhone, probably a 5S. It didn't look bigger, so I think it was a 5S. And the guy consciously pressed his finger to the screen, and then they took the screen and they put this down on a high-end scanner, and they scanned the glass of the phone while it was powered off, or asleep anyway, scanned his fingerprint off, inverted it, printed it out on acetate, overhead projector clear transparency sheets, printed it on that, used that to then etch the fingerprint to a PCB, a printed circuit board. And the fascinating thing to me was that in the video, there's an English translation, the guy speaking German, and the English translator for the video says, this is very common. This is something anyone could do in their kitchen. And
because everyone has a high-end scanner and laser printer and PCB board etching system in their kitchen.
Yeah, and the thing that I think people probably don't know is PCB is printed circuit board, and the etching process is how, when you look at motherboards and they have all that copper stuff printed to them, you know, and it looks like it's adhering, that's what you do with a printed circuit board. And the way this works involves, I don't know a whole lot about it, I've only done it a couple of times, but I know that it involves hydrochloric acid and 100% acetone. These are not things that you have under your sink in the kitchen unless maybe you're Walter White. So maybe Walter White could get his fingerprint, could hack the Touch ID on your phone. But if he's doing that, he has way better reasons than he found your phone in the back of a taxi. So once you etch the circuit board, then you take the grooves of the fingerprint in the circuit board and fill it with wood glue, and then carefully remove the wood glue impression, cover the wood glue impression with graphite, and then at that point, you're able to take someone's finger who is not registered with Touch ID, put this over top of it, and press it to the phone. And on the third attempt in the video, it finally did work.
Okay, it's really impressive that that they can do this.
Yeah, however, absolutely.
This is not practical. And if someone has your iPhone and they need to get in that badly, then they probably have you as well, and a much more effective system for unlocking your iPhone and bypassing security at that point is a baseball bat, because
exactly,
all they have to do is threaten you,
mm-hmm,
and at some point you're going to unlock your phone for them.
You know, in a sense, this is good though, because it shows some ingenuity and methodology that Apple will be examining and evaluating, and some Apple engineer is going to go, you know, I remember when we were doing the development of this, there was this issue we had, and this makes me think we can solve that issue now for greater security or something like that. I mean, I think it's always good to see these kinds of things happen, even if they're not practical for the average person, because it does sort of advance the state of our understanding of how the system works. I'm not saying it would lead to a more practical system, it may not. Prototypes sometimes lead to more, you know, easily used kits, mm-hmm, and things like that. But I think the better idea is that Apple will be looking at this and going, you know, what does this expose any weaknesses, and do we need to do anything? So it's good.
Well, and the thing about this is a security measure. Touch ID is a security feature of your phone, and as with anything, there's a security versus convenience matrix that you have to sort of evaluate for yourself. Every time someone leaves the house, a number of terrible things could happen to you when you leave the house. They could. You could get struck by lightning. You could be eaten by a shark. You could be hit by a bus. All of these things are possible because you are no longer inside your house.
You could get hit by a shark and eaten by a bus.
Even worse.
You could be hit by a toilet seat from a space station.
Also worse, these are all things that could happen. You could be on a plane that disappears. let's just, you know, put that out there.
Potentially worse. You don't know where they end up. Could be a better place. We don't know.
That's true. But it could also be 1977.
Which would be bad.
Yeah. So the thing with this is that Touch ID is a convenience measure so that you can use a 5 or 8 or 10 digit even passcode on your phone, but you don't have to enter it every time because you can use one of your fingers to do so. And so you have a more secure phone because you can use a longer passcode because you don't have to type it all the time. You have this shortcut that makes it a lot easier. And so this is one of those things where the security and the convenience, I mean, let's be honest, in real life, the person who is going to go after you and try to steal your phone is probably not the same person who wants into it badly enough to go through all of these gyrations in their kitchen or their garage or wherever to do this. True. In order to get into your phone. So a lot of times when somebody, you know, let's be honest about it. If somebody's going to steal your phone, most of the time the reason they want to steal your phone is because it's an expensive phone and they can sell it to someone else for money. It's an easy way to make money to relieve someone of their iPhone, period. That's why we've seen more things about, like, you have to turn off Find My iPhone. You have to sign out of iCloud when you restore your phone. You have to turn that stuff off in order to be able to do it, even for yourself, like legitimately. This is a small hurdle to restoring your phone to factory settings. Is you have to go in and turn off Find My iPhone, and you have to be able to authenticate in order to do that so that you can then reset your phone and set things back up. And the reason they do that is because that way somebody can't go steal your phone, factory restore it, and then sell it to someone else. Right. So I think this is two very different groups of people. And part of the reason I was really interested in making sure that this got written up was to sort of head off at the pass some of the hysteria that would inevitably come out about, oh no, Wilbur, what do we do? Because of all the hand-wringing and wailing and rending of garments that's going to happen over the fact that Touch ID is crackable. Because I think, Jeff, your estimation is correct. And first of all, as long as you're doing what you can to keep your phone near you, if you're in a place where maybe you shouldn't leave it in your pocket. Because, like, when I put my phone in my pocket, the top, well, I guess it's the bottom because I put my phone upside down, a portion of my phone pokes up out of the top of my pocket. It's very obvious I have a phone there. And so maybe sometimes that's when you want to put it in your bag and zip it up, or you want to tuck it further down into your pocket. And maybe it's not as comfortable, but it keeps it from being an obvious, hi, I'm a phone you should steal sort of situation, or, you know, pull your shirt down over the top of your pockets, people can't see it, that kind of thing. Do something to keep your phone secure, because all of this is predicated on physical access to the device, just like anything else.
If someone has your fingerprint.
Right. If someone has physical access to your computer, the odds of them being able to get into it are much higher than if they're just trying to do so over the internet. There are a number of barriers to keep that sort of thing from happening. So this is the kind of thing that you really need to kind of sit and think through. And if you really pay attention to it, that's why I broke it down in the piece I wrote and also here on the show, is because it's really important for people to understand that this is a lot of gyration. There's a whole bunch of work that goes into this. And for people who are out to steal phones for the sake of stealing phones, Jeff's method of getting in over Touch ID, that crack is very much going to be the more common route, which is, I will crack your skull or you will let me in your phone.
It's a very effective method.
The baseball bat technique.
That's
yeah,
right.
Like, you know, most people who are interested in taking a phone and getting into a phone that has Touch ID enabled, which is not their own phone, this is the method they are going to use. Generally, it's called percussive hacking.
I love that, percussive hacking.
Well, there's also, I mean, a lot of people use percussive therapy as a troubleshooting method. You smack it on the side and hope that makes it work again. Mm-hmm. So,
and
same
in some
sort
cases
of thing.
It works. Yeah.
Yeah. So this isn't something to be worried about. I view it more as an interesting thing, like we were talking about. You know, it's interesting that someone has done this. Perhaps it will make someone at Apple rethink things. More importantly, I mean, we all sort of knew that there was maybe a way that this could possibly happen. But, you know, as long as you're being pretty careful about, you know, like I always sort of rub my phone against my leg when I put it in my pocket anyway to make sure I'm not getting fingerprints. And someone who commented on the piece yesterday said, does this work with a screen protector? Because I have an anti-glare screen protector and my fingerprints don't show up on it at all.
Oh, now that might be a clever security measure. Anti-glare
so
screen reflector.
All of a sudden this person has a security measure. Now, yesterday with mine, I have one of those thin sheets of glass screen protectors on mine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, diamond earrings, and still nobody's found a way to make a phone that doesn't keep my diamond earrings from wearing two little grooves in the side of my phone. With the glass screen protector, if I press my thumb on it firmly and let up, you do get a pretty good fingerprint. However, because I put my phone in and out of my pocket 150 times a day, that fingerprint isn't there for very long, even if I were to use my entire thumb. And most people, when they type stuff on their phone, aren't using the full pad of their finger like they do with the Touch ID, regardless of whether it's your fingers or your thumb. You know, texting is like the tops of your thumb, which if you tried to use that with Touch ID wouldn't work. Or if you're swiping, that's not going to be a clear fingerprint. So there's a lot of reasons why this wouldn't work for someone out in the real world.
Sure. And keep in mind, most people, when they're putting their fingers on a device like this, they're not thinking about what angle is my finger at, how much of my finger is contacting as I lift my finger back off. So what mm-hmm. that translates to is many of the fingerprints that you leave on your devices are going to be smeared because your finger is going to be dragging as you put it down or mm-hmm. pick it up.
So and that helps for fun, too. Yeah, for fun, you can always look at your iPad and see, like for people who type a lot, you'll see if you're looking at it in a portrait, you'll see like, you know, sort of three rows of little dots down one side of your iPad. And if you're somebody who plays a lot of Angry Birds, you know, you'll see the little area of smear marks where you're pulling back the bird. And you're not going to see a whole lot of clear, full-on fingerprints. You know, you're just not. So.
Right. Yeah.
So, again, interesting, probably not very likely. And, you know, if for no other reason, if somebody wants into your phone that badly, they have some sort of reason for it. And so they're either going to be able to find a way around the Touch ID situation, which if you're using a 4-digit passcode is very easy to do. So you should turn off simple passcode and maybe use 5 digits so that if your phone does end up out of your possession, you're able to wipe it.
That's a very good tip. I've been telling people that when the four dots on the display gives it away that it's only a 4-digit passcode. And so somebody might get lucky and guess it. But if you switch over to the other technique where you have a longer passcode, mm-hmm. you could still only use a 4-digit passcode if you want to. But when people see that different display, they go, oh, my God, I don't know how many digits this is going to be. So
mm-hmm. Yes,
it's a good technique.
The pro tip I will give you on a longer passcode, which is a good idea even if you're not worried about somebody trying to hack the Touch ID on your phone, is that when you go to the longer passcode, it will give you the full keyboard with numbers and letters on it. You can still use all numbers. And if you do use all numbers, then when you go to the Touch ID, when you go to the passcode screen, you're not going to get a full keyboard. You're going to just get the numbers. So you don't have to worry about trying to fish those out from the full keyboard every time you want to unlock your phone. That's something that I have seen intimidate people when they go to set up the complex passcode. You know, if you turn off simple passcode, it lets you use letters and numbers and everything else, but you don't have to do it that way. You can use just numbers, and then you get the same interface that you would get with the 4-digit code. It's just that you get to enter more numbers.
Everybody should do that. Do it. Right. Just take some time after the show and just do that.
Yeah.
You know, I love how this has turned into, here are some great security tips for keeping your iPhone or iPad safe. That's awesome. Hey, yeah. we are like out of time, but before we wrap up, there's another thing I wanted to hit real quick.
Okay.
And this is the news that the lawsuit that Apple employees, like retail employees, brought against Apple for what they see as overtime that they're owed has been dropped or dismissed. And it was dismissed by the judge because a similar lawsuit that had been brought against Amazon employees went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no, you're not due pay for this time that you're spending waiting to have your bags and wallets checked at the end of your shift.
Oh, yes, you are. Oh, yes, you are. The Supreme Court made a mistake. If you're on duty, if it's required for your job responsibilities, if you're detained, it's part of your job to have your briefcase checked on the way out. If you tried to resist it, you'd be probably let go. And so it's a job responsibility to make sure you haven't accidentally carried anything out of the store. I don't think you should be paid overtime. I think it should be considered part of your regular duties. And you should be paid for it because it's mandatory. It's part of your job responsibility.
So I think what needs to happen with this is, first of all, the problem is that it was an individual who took this to the Supreme Court and not a company. If it had been a corporation, obviously the Supreme Court would have sided with them. The problem is that what's going to need to happen, I think the way to solve this problem is that if your shift ends at 5 o'clock and it takes 15 minutes to get out the door, then you need to start, you need to be off the floor at quarter till so that you can spend that time. And then once you've been through bag check, that's when you clock out.
Yeah, but the problem is that the Apple Store manager is not going to let you get away with that. And they're just going to dock you for leaving early.
Except that you didn't leave early. And so what I'm really hoping, that's the solution to this problem, is that the time that it takes to get through bag check is built into your shift. Because otherwise it does end up being overtime. So if it's not going to end up, if you don't want to end up having to pay people for overtime, then what you do is your shift goes until 5, and what you have to do is go through bag check and then clock out, which means you spend 15 minutes in line or whatever.
But now that the court case is over, the right way for Apple to deal with this is to put a policy in place that says this is part of your job responsibility and that we're going to pay you for this. Mm-hmm. That's the right way to approach this now that it's all, the dust is settled.
Sure. Yeah, well, I don't think they could have done that before now, though.
Yeah,
I don't think it would have been possible before.
Angela Ahrens is the kind of person who will make this right, I hope.
I hope so, too.
Hopefully. And if not, then hopefully likely what we'll see is that employees will enforce the policy in their own way, which is they'll leave the floor early or they won't clock out until after their bag check is done.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll get fired and then they'll start a new lawsuit.
Rinse, repeat. I really hope that this doesn't turn out to be a bigger issue than it needs to be, because you're making an employee spend that time. And if an employee is not allowed to leave until this has happened, then this is something that is now part of their job. So either you're going to pay somebody 10 minutes of overtime, or you're going to end up letting them leave the floor early to make sure they get through check. Now, the smart thing to do is for Apple to find a way to make the bag check as efficient as possible. Because if it really is taking that much time, to me, that's the pain point in this process. If it took a couple of minutes, you know, if it's 5 minutes or less for me to get out of the store once I've clocked out, I'm probably not going to care that much.
Well, you know, there's a morale issue, too. It's one thing to say we went through a very strict screening process. We did background checks to make sure you don't have a criminal record. You know, we think you're a great salesman, but we don't trust you to not walk out of the store with an iPad or iPod stuck in your briefcase. We don't trust you.
That's
digs
the big
into the
problem
morale.
Right there.
But then to say, not only do we not want to trust you, but because we don't want to trust you and we're making you hang around, we're going to not pay you either. So right. It's rubbing salt in the wound twice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good for employee morale.
Not at all.
No, it's not. So I would like to see Angela Arendt drop the policy of bag checks. I think that would be the nice thing, because if they trust their employees enough to hire them and let them handle all of this merchandise, then they ought to trust them enough to believe that they won't steal. I mean, they will let us as customers walk in the store, pay with something from our iPhone, and walk out without anyone seeing, and they won't question that.
Right, and they don't. Usually it's those giant glass doors, so they don't have those gate things with the little scanners in them that go off like you see at, you know, Macy's and Home Depot
Steve
and stuff.
Steve Jobs wouldn't allow that.
Yeah, they don't have those, which means if you trust me as a customer to walk in and out and do that, why wouldn't you trust an employee to do so? You will trust these employees to take a multiple $1,000 computer into the back room away from my site, crack it open, do whatever it is they need to do, reassemble it. Again, I still can't see my computer. And then bring my multiple $1,000 computer back out to me and go, here, we've made your computer better for you. And you can trust someone to do that, but you don't think you can trust them to walk out without a fistful of lightning cables? Because really.
Yeah, well, the way to do that is maybe randomized spot checks.
Just to make sure. That still says we don't trust you.
Well, it also says that there are employees who, you know, make a business out of selling a few iPhones, you know, fresh out of the box that haven't been configured yet. So the fact that the employee knows there's going to be random spot checks doesn't and not very often.
And remember that doesn't necessarily mean every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The fact
they know they could be caught, but it's it's not a morale demoralizing thing where every employee, every day out the door has to be checked. That's a real bad sign that we don't trust you.
Right. And I've seen I've worked in a number of places where one of the things that you have to submit to is the random drug test, because at any point someone could come by and try to give you a drug test.
Sure.
Now, I've worked in places like that for multiple years and never seen anyone actually given a random drug test. So it's the kind of thing where, like, we reserve the right in case there is an issue. Mm-hmm. And that seems to me to be the right answer here.
Now, we do random drug testing here at TMO, and it's just important everyone knows this. And what we're looking for is to make sure your alcohol content is high enough. If not, we'll do what we can to fix that for you.
I figured it was just testing to make sure we're on the good stuff.
Yeah, I can fix that tonight.
Know, it's all about standards. Hey, we're out of time, like totally out of time. We went over, and there you go. That's just how we are sometimes. Anyhow, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today. And John, thank you as well.
Happy New Year to all.
That's right.
Happy New Year to you. And I would like to say that probably the high point of my 2014 is getting to hang out here with all of you.
You know, it has been absolutely awesome having you around this year. And I'm looking forward to all the awesome stuff that we have waiting for us in 2015. So all of our listeners, thank you for being a part of the show this year. And please be safe this evening as you celebrate New Year's Eve in whatever way is appropriate for you. And we will not be around on Thursday, which is January 1st, because hey, New Year's Day. But we'll see you again on Friday, January 2nd. And thank you, everyone, for being here this year. We'll see you next year.
Cheers.